Welcome to Leaders and Legends of Online Learning, a podcast dedicated to the experts. Thank you for listening. Each episode, we'll be learning from the world's leading thinkers and practitioners in online learning and linking to ideas relevant to online teaching, working with online learners, and digital education. You can listen to the experts and check their profiles and link to some of their work on our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com. I'm Mark Nichols, the interviewer in this episode. You'll meet Professor Peter Taylor in this episode. Peter is Professor of Organic Chemistry with the Open University UK. His practice as a distance educator has changed significantly over the years, and I'm certain you'll find his writing of the technology-enhanced learning wave very interesting. Peter and I talked in the Ginny Lee Building at the Open University. I'm joined by Professor Peter Taylor, who is a professor at the Open University, specialising in organic chemistry. Peter, it's wonderful to be talking with you.
Thank you for inviting me.
Can we start with a brief overview of your career and online teaching, just to give us a bit of context?
So I pretty much got involved with the Open University from when I left research at about 25 years old. Now, before that, as a PhD student, this was in organic chemistry, I'd had some contact with something called CalChem. This was a project which was run out of Leeds, and a friend of mine was doing some work on it, and I could see the potential for using computers in teaching. These weren't computers as we know them now. These were kind of teleprinter type style things. So it was very kind of difficult to represent things, but nevertheless, there were ways in which you could use the computer to do quizzes and the like. Then when I joined the Open University, I found that we were using CalChem as part of our chemistry courses. So students would go to what were then regional centres, use the terminals in the regional centres to do this work. They would do it at residential school. And I think that was my kind of first introduction to using computers, in particular, to kind of develop learning.
So was CalChem a quiz system?
It was mainly a quiz system, yeah. But you could do things like put in data and it would draw graphs and the like. But these were kind of very stylized graphs because it was literally, as I said, on a teleprinter. It was, you know, it doesn't have the sophistication of modern screens. And then a colleague of mine who'd really come from Leeds and was working as a computer expert in teaching, was working on things like a laser disc, which was some of the early kind of interactive use of computers. And I, again, whilst I was not greatly involved in it, I could see the potential. And so after that came a number of things around using basically CDs with interactive activities on them, where the students would put them into their computer and do some of the difficult things in chemistry, in organic chemistry, because we represent things in three ways. So we have the real world, we have a conceptual world, and we have a symbolic world. Helping students move between those three worlds is an ideal activity for computers. And so that was some of my early kind of introduction, was helping students use the symbolism and thinking about what that looks like in three dimensions, but also what that means in the real world. And it then, I suppose, it wasn't until 2008 that we really started doing online teaching using VLEs in any big way.
And what did that unlock for you in terms of pedagogy?
I think the most important thing that I realized was I was no longer writing a book. So up until then, so for most of my career, all within the Open University was about writing interactive materials which were based on a book. But now I had an opportunity to create something different. And what I had to do was not create a book on the screen, but actually do something different. And because the university was just introducing the VLE, a lot of people really didn't know how to handle it. And so it was a little bit at the beginning like the Wild West, where you could do things that you can't do now. So the VLE perhaps wasn't locked down as much as it is now, and, yeah. and managed and controlled. And so I quickly learned some of the kind of things that I could do with a virtual learning environment. I also learned that I could take a lot of the old material that we have, particular video material, and I could edit it myself and kind of repackage it and put it up on the VLE.
Yeah.
So there were lots of things that I was finding I could do for myself now that I didn't necessarily need a kind of a high technical kind of expertise to do for me. Mm. And the other thing was around I could start to create my own little videos as well. So that's what I started thinking about. How do I use words? How do I use video? How do I use the interactivity of the computer in terms of quizzes and the like to create a very different experience to reading the book and then going off and using a CD on your computer?
So those sorts of things you're talking about, you could possibly use for every subject?
Oh, very much so, yeah. So it was particularly important for me in chemistry to think about what were the difficult concepts?
Yep.
Where were the areas that the computer would provide us with that extra ability to teach that we couldn't in using just kind of simple two-dimensional paper?
Mm.
And every subject has those kind of conceptual challenges. And I think the computer enables everybody to teach in a slightly different way, providing people are prepared to take advantage of it.
Mm.
And the online world provides you with lots of opportunities through kind of being able to simulate experiments, to be able to do remote experiments. But actually, there's things like planning an experiment, there's kind of observation, there's measuring. All those things can be done as pretty well equally in the online world as they can in the laboratory. And when it came down to it, we decided the real thing you can't do online at the moment so easily is the kind of the manipulations. So to be able to handle glassware, put it together, know what it feels like, kind of clamping it up so it doesn't break. All of those things are the things that you can't do. And that's perhaps what you need to focus the laboratory activity on so that you prepare the student outside of the laboratory for everything else, but the one skill you need to develop, you can then concentrate on in the laboratory. But actually, the manipulation bit isn't that difficult. So I don't think that the kind of the real world, the experimental world, is such a challenge anymore, and that actually the online world provides us with lots of ways in which we can prepare students for that real world.
Great. So in actual fact, the distance element is not a barrier.
Very much not, because most equipment that you buy nowadays is computer controlled, so particularly analytical equipment. And, you know, usually you're sitting at a screen pressing keyboards and the instrument is doing all the work. So sitting in your bedroom at home and operating a particular piece of kit remotely isn't very different from sitting in the laboratory and doing it. So, you know, the two worlds are coming closer and closer together as kind of more and more instrumentation is computerized. The real challenge still, though, is the social context.
Mm, yeah.
And trying to create social communities online is still a challenge for us. I think, you know, it's the opportunity you had when you went into a lecture and came out the lecture and maybe talked about it with your colleagues over coffee and revisited some of it is part of that learning process. And our students who are kind of studying online, you know, trying to recreate that opportunity for interaction around the subject is quite a challenge still, I think.
Yeah.
I joined a Facebook group for one of the modules which I was looking at a few years ago, and the students forgot I was on it. And I could see much more creative support of each other within that Facebook group than I could see on the forum.
Right.
So within that Facebook group, people were really talking about how they felt, what they understood, what they didn't understand. And colleagues, peers were helping them to come to terms, help them to kind of get through the course, trying to explain some of the kind of the concepts. I found it difficult at times not to leap in and maybe kind of sort out some of the misconceptions that were going on in there. But nevertheless, I saw some real kind of useful peer support and peer teaching going on. So the real challenge is, how do we as teachers encourage that to happen in a safe space, but in a space where we can have some influence and make sure that, you know, things like the concepts and ideas that are taught are appropriate.
So I guess you're both concerned but also reassured at the same time.
Oh, very much so, because what I was reassured about was that online support was there. Even though I wasn't kind of responsible for looking after it. One of the things I discovered early on was that because I'd worked with the BBC and we'd made video and that had audio, big cameras and the like, that I always felt it was a very sophisticated process of making television and making radio programs, that you needed to be in kind of soundproof booths, or you needed to have high-tech equipment, and then you'd need to have editors and everything behind the scenes. One of the things that I think has really changed in the last 10 years, and it's possibly because of various kind of media sharing kind of platforms, is that students have a lower expectation in terms of quality of production. That I can take a camera, I can take a recorder out with me, I can capture things, bring it back, edit it in, and create something, usually short, just a couple of minutes, that I can then put up without, you know, worrying too much about having to do what we used to do, is have to bid for resources, then you'd have to get the cameraman, the sound man, and everybody else along, and you know, and it was a major activity. And I think that's one of the important areas for the future in terms of online learning, is around that kind of user-produced materials. Mm. So the ability to be able to be on a forum and to see students who say, I really don't understand this. You know, I'm not sure how to do this. I can go away and in half an hour or so, make a very short podcast and stick it up there, which is what I hope will then explain those misconceptions.
Right, so those misconceptions you haven't seen in advance as you put the materials together.
Well, there's always different misconceptions that come. You, whenever I write and produce something, I think, yeah, this is all nice and clear. This is, and it's only when it gets into the hands of students that you really do understand where the strengths and weaknesses are. And sometimes it only comes out when you ask a particular assignment. Mm. Because that assignment tests a particular aspect of the concept that they perhaps hadn't really surfaced before.
Yeah.
And that's when we kind of need to kind of think, well, let's produce some extra material for how to kind of explain that.
Yeah. Is there a bit of a tension there? Because your subject expertise is obviously organic chemistry. You're a very, very experienced educator as well. But would you see it as perhaps a shift from what you do as an academic, the research, et cetera, to actually also have to learn these tools of how to put together a podcast or a video?
That's an interesting one, because as a researcher, one of the key metrics, the key kind of performance is around publication of papers. Mm. And the thing that has surprised me is how that publication world hasn't moved in the same way as perhaps our teaching world has moved. Mm. So it's still predominantly a paper-based system. So I write a paper in a particular structure, you can put hyperlinks into it, etc. But it's still a paper-written document. You know, in an ideal world, I would say I'll video the experiment whilst it's on, and that could be a link to the experimental.
Yeah.
So rather than having to describe the experimental, then people can actually see it going on.
Right.
there's a long history of book publishing here in, you know, in the UK in terms of journals and the like. So moving away from that is slow, but it's happening.
So you're suggesting that media literacy should become an academic discipline?
Well, I think we all should become much more media literate,
yeah,
and understand the potential of the media in terms of communication and in terms of teaching and research and in terms of training. Mm. And I think it's something we require of our students. So digital literacy is an important aspect. Mm. And I think, you know, maybe we should be spending more time with staff developing those digital skills. And I think that's not just about kind of using VLE, but some of it is around going out and using video cameras, going out and using audio.
So you've obviously stayed fresh, if you like, in terms of all of this pedagogy and taking your subject to the students through the online world. Today, late 2018, your teaching has obviously been highly influenced by the online world.
Yep.
What are some of the features of it that you could share with us?
So I think one of the key features is the opportunity to be able to undergo self-assessment. So the idea of using quizzes for students to be able to study something and then for the computer to be able to analyse just how well the student has understood it and then be able to give not only feedback and guidance, but maybe some advice around where to, you know, go back and read that section again or whatever. So that kind of analysis of understanding by the computer, I think, is a real opportunity. Mm. And I think, obviously, the opportunity of putting a lot more video, audio, a much bigger mix of different media to engage the student is important. One of our challenges is still around online and on-screen, that not everybody will be able to study online. You want things that are portable. Mm. So to be able to kind of put things onto the screen, which not necessarily online, but is kind of in the memory, and then you can work through it whilst on your train journey or wherever you are, is an important kind of opportunity for us. Because our students loved books, and the reason they liked books was because they were portable and they could study when they had those spare moments. Locking them down to an online screen on their big computers was not a particularly well-received thing. But I think being able to put it onto your device, carry it around with you, be able to read it on your device, I think, you know, makes a difference.
Mm. And there's an interesting shift in terminology. So rather than talking about online, we tend to talk a lot about digital these days.
Yeah.
Which, of course, can be online or offline.
Yeah, yes, very much so. Yeah. Interestingly, after my experience, I became the VLE champion in our faculty. Mm. So my role was to move us from that book-based to a kind of VLE kind of environment and to convince colleagues that this was the way to go.
Yeah.
Now, I was one of them in that, you know, for 25 years or so, I spent all my time writing books, and that's what we trained to do, and that's what we were very good. We met quite a bit of resistance from colleagues. And so you had to kind of be able to show that this was an opportunity for you as an academic to be more creative.
Mm. So I think that there are pressures too on learning activity design as a result of technology moving forward, because obviously the academic can be a lot more empowered now.
Yep.
It might have been under a print-based mechanism where everything had to go to an editor, had to be formatted into a book format, had to be rendered like a book.
Yeah, and I think, as I said, we were used to, understanding how it works in a book. I think understanding the workstream process for creating a virtual learning environment is still a work in progress. The book production model has been around for, you know, a long time. And so, you know, you went through the days of kind of galleys, and then you'd have kind of proofs and the like. And we knew how to cope with that. I think knowing how to cope with and comment on and develop online material is still tricky. Mm. One of the important aspects of all of our course team work is that when I look at a colleague's work, I need to take on the role of a student. So I need to think about how would a student cope with this? Are there ideas, perceptions in here that I might not be able to understand? And being able to work my way through that online experience, it's a different way of being able to comment. In the print, you could just write in the margin.
Yeah.
But in this online world, there's a completely different way in which we need to tag our comments.
I'm quite fascinated by the way in which you've taken what some would call the generic VLE tools, quizzes, online discussion forums, etc. You've applied them well to your subject. You've also gone beyond that, and you've linked the likes of the chemistry applications you mentioned earlier to help address areas of conceptual difficulty, but again, very, very relevant to the student outcomes that your modules are trying to put across. I think it's a wonderful balance in terms of what an academic does.
Yeah, but academics also need to be adventurous and creative and do things differently. Sometimes they don't work so well. The things that have worked well have been when I've been able to set it up so it's easy for academic staff to implement.
So there's got to be some sort of mutual benefit to the, the academics, the students certainly, but that evidence base is all important.
Yeah.
Peter, as an online educator, what research would you most like to see at the moment? What do you think the online world needs in order to help academics take these things forward?
I think there's different ways in which we could be producing material to meet the different ways in which students learn. So having a smart VLE, which is able to kind of interpret how a student is learning and provide them with particular pathways through that material that meets their learning style, I think would be a real opportunity. It does mean that we have to create different ways of teaching particular concepts and the like. And so there's extra work within that. But I think in terms of helping students learn on particularly large courses, it would be a good investment. The other challenge that I have is around assessment feedback. We put a lot of effort into giving good feedback to our students. And my worry is, how do I know that students have actually acted upon that feedback? How do I know that they've read it? How do I know they've reflected upon it? Having some mechanism that's built into the VLE, which enables the student to get the feedback, but has some kind of measure of how well they're reflecting upon it, I think would be a real opportunity. I mean, we can easily see, have they opened that page? But that says nothing about whether they've actually read it and reflected upon it. And for distance learning institutions, the feedback is the only piece of personalised teaching that a student gets.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, because they're busy people, by the time they get their feedback, they've often moved on to something else and it's not prioritised. So thinking about how we can make them use the feedback, make them in a nice way, use the feedback and appropriately is a real challenge. And I'm not sure that we've cracked that yet.
I wonder if it might be possible to get a mechanism by which a tutor or a marker can actually redefine the marking guide for the following assignment based on the feedback that's been provided, within certain boundaries.
Certainly, there's a whole range of marking tools now that we, certainly within the Open University, could be using to gather up typical feedback and producing kind of good exemplar feedback that people can easily use. Then by analysing the feedback that was given, you'd find out where students are making their mistakes and where they're kind of the things that they know and the things that they don't know. And you can then go back in and perhaps try and unpick some of those misconceptions in the materials for the following year.
Yeah, so that the module's learning at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh, very good. Peter, obviously you're not a solo agent when it comes to developing yourself in the online world. There's no doubt there have been people who have inspired you or assisted you along the way. What one or two individuals who stand out for you?
Going back to the CalChem world, there was, I think he was a student at the time, a guy called Phil Butcher. And he then came to the OU and he was working on CalChem, and he then started working on quizzes and Moodle quizzes. And I think he was somebody who really inspired me to go away and to think about how I use quizzes in a completely different way. Mm. And, you know, it was because he had an academic perspective to how we use quizzes and what quizzes are meant to be. And he was a chemist. It enabled me to see the real strengths and the importance of building in effective feedback into the quizzes. Mm. So he's one person who's influenced. There've been a number of people who have influenced me from their writing. Mm. And the clarity of writing and the kind of the logic of the writing. And I don't think you lose that in translation into the online world. Mm. It's still understanding, unpicking a concept to its bare bones, mm. and then rebuilding it up either on paper or in the online world. And again, colleagues of mine who taught me how to look at materials from a student's perspective.
Mm. Yeah.
So rather than me reading it as an organic chemist, experienced or whatever, but actually going right the way back to, you know, how would I interpret this if I was a student without that background, and to question whether the material's working. So I think those are the real kind of influences. And a lot of the other stuff around the online learning, we've kind of learned together. So as the universities developed its kind of online learning capacity, we've tried things out. Some have not worked, some have worked. And it's been a journey, and it could be a continuing journey.
Absolutely. Well, Peter, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking with you. You're certainly a leader of online learning.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Brilliant, thank you.
You can find Peter's profile and links to his research from our website. That concludes this episode. Be sure to go to our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com, to follow up on this episode's guest. You'll also find links to others whose ideas continue to inspire and teach online learning professionals, and you can subscribe to future interviews. If you know of a leader or legend we've not yet talked to, please do drop us a line at onlinelearninglegends@gmail.com.